on the banks of the Grand River, high above the Alora Gorge. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Indie music, new releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations with guests from the true north, from the west coast to the east coast to across the pond, and from down under. And now, here is Shay.
Hey, Shay here on Air Indie. Welcome and enjoy episode 16. Today we have Hamilton, Ontario-based band Pyramids on Mars. Dropout Entertainment nominated the band for Best Metal Video of 2020 for the track Song of Light. Kevin Estrella is here to talk about his music, the creative influences behind the unique otherworldly of his sound, and other great stuff. Welcome, Kevin. Great to have you on the show. So, Kevin, what is the most impactful story your music has shared, and why?
Well, I think it's actually more to do with the style of music that I play and how I approach songwriting. My music is instrumental rock, very similar in the style of guitarists like Joe Satriani and Steve Vai. And there's also a lot of other rock musicians out there now, instrumental guitar players who play too. But what a lot of these players do though is there's a lot, like the lead guitar is quite predominant in your face with a lot of instrumental rock guitar music, and it's become a lot more and more of that these days. But my music is more in the style of Joe Satriani, in this type of story writing that he tells with his music. His music is very melodic, and he has very strong melodic themes that show up in the songs. And that's what initially inspired me when I first heard Satriani, were these very strong melodic themes that you could sing. And that was like, my God, that's what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. That's how I want to play guitar. And so very strong melodic leads are very important to me in a song, and they tell a story. They do tell a story, but the song itself also has to tell a story. And I'm influenced, my influences. Yeah, I have a lot of Satriani in my influence, but I haven't listened to Satriani like probably 5 or 6 years. I've gone my own direction. I've taken the best of Satriani, the best of Vai, and the best of my influences. But all I focus now on is what I do, and my influences are more coming from bands like Rush, and Tool, and Led Zeppelin, and the band, the unit of the band, the drums, the guitar, the bass, the keyboards, the song. It's all about the song. And that's where the storytelling takes place. For me, the most important thing has always been the song. It's not about the guitar solo. It's not about any of that kind of stuff. And that's kind of what's turned me off a lot from a lot of new guitar players that I hear today who are instrumental rock musicians who put out instrumental guitar stuff.
And why do you feel that about guitar players?
And it just seems like the song is really a jam track for them to show off their technical abilities. And there's not really a story that's being told. There's not a really grabbing riff in the song that says, hey, this is the song. It's more like a backing track so that they can solo over. And I'm not about that. That's not what I do. That's not my kind of music. For me, it's about the song. It's back to like what Satriani was doing, where the guitar sings a song and tells a story.
Wow, that is an interesting explanation. Thank you for sharing
that.
So
that's really my approach. I use a lot of repeating themes when I play. There's a lot of repetition in the melodies that I play so that you can actually hum it all the way home.
Love that. Love that.
They catch in your head and you can remember them. I don't know how many times I've had people tell me, I was walking down the street and I had this melody playing in my head and I had no idea where it came from. And yeah, I realized it was your song. That's pretty cool. So it's got to be a melody that's memorable. I mean, you listen to the best classical music the pieces of classical music that you remember yourself, what was it about that song that you remember, why you can sing it, or why you remember it? It's because it was a melody that was memorable and was not overly complicated. You know, like think of, you know, Vivaldi or Bach or, you know, these, or, you know, Mozart. Da 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 da. You know, you remember because you can sing it. So that's important to me. Song has to tell a story.
Kevin, you come from a musical family. I do know that. Your dad is a gifted jazz player. Has a jazz influence strongly influenced your earlier music? Or is it showing up in current releases?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, actually, as the first music that I was introduced to was actually jazz when I was a little kid, when I was like, you know, 3 or 4 years old. My father had a turntable, and my dad's he's a jazz musician. He plays trumpet. He's always been in a jazz band. So I was always surrounded by music from an early age. The first music that I was actually ever exposed to was some of his jazz records. So Blood, Sweat, and Tears. But actually, a lot of it, what I really liked was his Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass albums. And it was the catchy melodies that Herb Albert was playing, and he's a trumpet player, and you hear his music all the time that's used in so many TV shows and old movies and stuff like that. And once again, going back to what I was talking about melodies, is because he had catchy melodies. The songs were short, but the melodies were really, really catchy and caught on with people.
Yes, his music did.
And it wasn't until, like, in the last couple of years, we all got together and bought my father a new turntable, really, really high quality. And then we're sitting there, you know, at Christmas time, and he pulled out all his jazz albums, and we're listening to it on vinyl. And honestly, vinyl is, there's nothing, no experience like vinyl. I'm totally about vinyl. My friend has a most eclectic vinyl player with these TEK or Tez white monitors, studio monitors from England that are from 1968, the same kind that Abbey Road was mixed on. He's got these speakers, and oh my God, we were listening to nothing but vinyl for a whole evening. I got to hear David Gilmour's solo album on vinyl. We listened to Black Sabbath, Masters of Reality on vinyl. The experience was unlike anything you can even imagine. We got to get back to vinyl.
Oh yeah, I agree. Vinyl sound is 100% the best format.
Anyway, so we're sitting there going back to, you know, listening to the jazz records from my father, and I'm listening to these Herb Albert albums, you know, 30 years later, and I'm thinking, you know, the way he played that, the way he phrased that, and the way he wrote that song is exactly how I would have written a song. And then I realized that subconsciously I was influenced that much by Herb Albert that I didn't even realize it until, you know, looking back at my own DNA circuitry of who I am as a musician and what was important to me in the song. And it happened to be catchy melodies, good song structure that's not overly complicated, and memorable, very memorable. So it's kind of like it came all full circle again. And I never realized how much of those old, you know, older jazz albums had, you know, had such an influence on me. It was quite remarkable.
Thank you for sharing that, Kevin. Your music is somewhat rebellious and unconventional. It definitely has its own sound. Why is that?
Why is my music rebellious? Well, I don't conform to one particular style. And that's the signature of Pyramids on Mars. And that's what I've been come to known as, is that, you know, if you listen to a Pyramids on Mars song, there's not, you know, songs that they're not all the sounding the same. You've got, you know, certain bands who have a signature sound, and if you hear one of their songs, you can recognize them immediately by their sound in almost every else thing that, you know, they put out. I mean, you know, good examples of that are AC/DC or the Tragically Hip. So they've got a, you know, a sound that you just recognize. With Pyramids on Mars, it's a little bit different. I have different influences from different bands, and those influences will come out in songs. And a lot of songs I've written have actually been inspired by. Okay, so when I'm working on a new album, I actually have a little list which I say, you know, like my song ideas, and it'll be like a song in the style of this song from this artist. A song in the style of this song from this artist. Or it'll be like, I want to write a song that has this quality of this song from this artist, but does this from this artist, and then you know, transmute two songs into one.
Wow, that is amazing.
A perfect example of that is my song Mercury Magnetar off of Edge of the Black. Now, if you listen to that song, it's in a 5/4 groove, and it was the DNA merging of two songs. I took Joe Satriani's song Unstoppable Momentum. I took that 5/8 groove and that riff that he played, and then I took the chord progression of Queen's song Radio Gaga and those keyboard sounds, and I merged the two together. That's the song that I was hearing in my head, was those two songs merged together. So when you listen to Mercury Magnetar, it sounds like a completely new song, and it is, but it was because I had the creative vision that I heard two different songs, completely unrelated songs, together as one. And so that's a good example of kind of crazy things that I do. So I would say that my music is very, it is rebellious that way. And I'll write a song, you know, that's in the style of Jimi Hendrix. I'll write a song that's in the style of Meshuggah, you know. I'll write a song in the style of Satriani or Ministry or you know, Extreme. It doesn't matter.
Your music took a turn in the album Edge of the Black.
There was a drastic change that took place during Edge of the Black, during the last half of the album. And then I was writing most of my music on my signature guitar, which is, that guitar is actually designed by Alex Lifeson of Rush. And he played that guitar in the late 80s on the album Hold Your Fire and for those tours. And so that song, that guitar has a very specific tone. And whenever I play that guitar just says something. It speaks for itself. I don't write the music. That guitar writes the music. And then that guitar ended up writing half the album on Edge of the Black. It wrote, you know, The Ambassador. It wrote Arcturian Rain. And that started the new direction of where I was going musically. And my new album that's coming out, which is Cosmic Angels, has that signature sound. And a lot of the direction of where I was going, the Edge of the Black, is now the new direction of where Pyramids of Mars is going.
Well, let's expand on your influences. You have very outstanding and unusual influences that affect your songwriting.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I have a lot of influences that are affecting my music that are more than just my musical influences. You know, like I have a lot of classical influence in my music as well. My greatest inspirations come from J.S. Bach and Antonio Vivaldi, Baroque classical composers. So there's where a lot of my melodic ideas come from, is from classical music, directly from classical music. My guitar playing, I'm more influenced by violin music than I am guitar music. That's what attracts me, is violin music. And so whenever I hear violin melodies, that's what I transcribe onto my guitar, or I think of my guitar as if it's actually a violin. So that's that kind of influence comes in there too.
Let's talk about Star Nation.
And that is quite a long story, because I am an experiencer, and I have had continuous extraterrestrial contact since 2014. I've done over 60 UFO radio interviews. Count that again, 60, 6-0, because of my ongoing continuous contact by extraterrestrials. So I speak publicly about them, and I work closely with a group who are, they're Zetas from Zeta Reticuli. So they're the extraterrestrials that most people are familiar with, who are, you know, they're short and they're gray with large heads and big black eyes. The group I deal with are the Ponte, who live in a base under the Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I work very closely with them, and they visit me on quite a regular basis. In fact, right now I'm staring at my Pyramids on Mars poster, which has hand dust fingerprints of them all over it, with these long, long fingers that are, you know, 2 inches longer than humans, and there's only 4 fingers. They covered my entire poster with their handprints.
The Ponte?
I'm staring at it right now. So, yeah, they come here all the time and hang out. But they've taught me a lot of things. And one of the greatest things that they taught me was one of my teachers, her name is Teenie, and she said that you realize that music can be communicated at a telepathic level. And I was like, I did not understand this. I didn't know it was possible. And she said, well, you essentially are already doing it. You just weren't conscious of it. And you can tell stories and you can weave stories and images in your music that will actually be recorded in the recording. And so I was absolutely, I couldn't believe it. It was like, it was a complete paradigm shift for me. And I asked, can you help me develop this and help me teach me more about this? And so she did. And so Edge of the Black is the result of those teachings. There's a lot that the music is telepathic and being communicated at a telepathic level. So it's carried on emotional wavelengths of pure emotion, of pure love in all the strings and all the notes that are being played, and being played full heartfelt. And that is the communication on a telepathic level. And that is what extraterrestrials listen for. They listen for the emotion that's in the music, the actual emotion. That's one of the things that they taught me.
What else have they taught you?
They also taught me about the tonal language of the whales and how the whales speak a very complex tonal language that is also telepathic. And I asked if they could teach me this. And a couple of years ago, one of the new girls, her name is Thera, and one of the new Ponte, she was teaching me this. I received a massive download from them one evening.
Kev, what is the download?
It's kind of like, the best way to describe it, if you've seen the movie The Matrix, when the Neo is getting all these cards put in and they're downloading all this information, and all of a sudden he's like, I know Kung Fu. That's not science fiction. That's based on reality, on real things that take place, and the kind of technology that extraterrestrials have, where they can download you with information. I've experienced it so many times, and the symptoms are always the same after I've had a download. The next day I'm extremely groggy and extremely tired, and I usually have to go home and have a long download reboot nap, and it literally feels like a reboot because of how heavy some of these downloads are. But I digress. Anyway, one of the downloads she gave me was actually the tonal language of the whales introductory course. It would be almost 9 months before I actually accessed those memories of those teachings. And then I ended up writing Nach Waffen on Edge of the Black. And there, in that, in the main melody of that song, is tonal language. The melody is actually, there's no words, but the melody, the tones that I'm playing actually are saying, do you hear me? And I didn't know it at the time when I wrote it. It wasn't until afterwards that I finished the song and was listening back, and all of a sudden I got it was like a sudden knowing, and I heard a translation of the music, and it was, do you hear me? I was actually saying in the recording, and I just broke down and cried. It was the most incredible moment of my life, besides the birth of my first son, what happened with that tonal language. So my extraterrestrial teachers have taught me so much, and they continue to teach me, and there's so much that they have to offer to teach us of the 16 million years of advancement that they have over us.
Amazing, Kevin. Well, the sound of Pyramid on Mars has definitely evolved over time. What can fans expect in your next release, Kevin?
Well, getting back to, as I was saying, with how my music continues to evolve, where each song does not sound the same as the next one, and each guitar has a different tone than another guitar, and the guitar wants to say something different, so the music is always evolving. There's still the same elements in Pyramids on Mars. The way the songs are structured, the tones, and the melodic themes, a lot of that is very structured, but the sound will be completely different. So with the new album, as I explained, a lot of it, half of the album was written on the signature guitar. However, the other half of the album sounds completely different than anything else that I've done. It sounds more influenced by, sounds more like my older band, Shatter Instinct, when we were more of a Tool-influenced band. And so I'm playing everything else on my Les Paul guitar, which has been tuned down quite considerably low. So it's there's a long story about how this happened.
Tell us the story.
The other songs on my next album, my guitar, I went to pick up my Les Paul one evening last year, and it sounded so rich, and I started all these new songs just started to come out, and were just coming out of the guitar, like song after song, like written like in one take, these great song ideas, and I was recording them all, and then I realized that the guitar sounded really lower than it normally did, and I went to check the tuning, and the guitar was completely retuned. It was tuned down a whole step and a half from where it was. It was like I did an analysis. It was actually tuned to a baritone setting, but it was also at a different frequency, because I tuned my music is played at 432 hertz and tuned to 432 hertz versus 440, and there's a reason for that. I'm not going to get into it right now. But my other guitar, my Les Paul, when I checked the tuning, it had been tuned to 528 hertz solfeggio frequency, which is the love, it's a healing frequency, DNA repair frequency, love frequency. I didn't do that. I was like, okay, who retuned my guitar? It wasn't that it was out of tune, it was completely retuned. Somebody came in here, physically sat down with the guitar, retuned it to a different frequency. And then I found out that it was one of my Ponte friends, Grayson, who had retuned my guitar. And he thought that I could experiment in a different frequency and a different retuning. And then he even, oh my God, this is crazy. I was interviewing Sue Walker and Reverend White Otter on my radio show, who are the telepathic translators for the Ponte. And while they were interviewing me, Grayson interrupted Sue and started talking to Sue to talk to me. And then live on TV, Grayson started to tell me he taught me how to play my guitar and what to listen to. And he said, the low E string, listen to that as it's supposed to be the eureka of the song and bring it back whole. And it was a long explanation of how he's explained how to play the guitar. And so the new album, the new music that's coming out, you're going to hear this guitar with these new tunings in the music. So it's a very different direction of where I'm going musically, and I'm really excited about it. And I think it's going to turn a lot of heads, because nobody else is doing what these albums sound like. It doesn't sound like anything else out there in the music right now.
Wow. What an incredible story. Your music definitely took a turn in Arcturian Rain. Tell me about that.
With Arcturian Rain, once again, that was written on the signature guitar, and that song was written in one take. Just picked up my guitar, and these beautiful chords came together, and the song just came together. The whole song structure just came, And it's not an overly complicated song, but it actually ended up being my most favorite album or most favorite song on Edge of the Black. It was the very last song for Edge of the Black that I needed. I needed one more song to finish the album, and it ended up being Arcturian Rain. And I just fell in love with the sound of what I was doing with that song. It was just the energy, the sound with it. I can't describe it. It was just something beautiful. And in the middle of that song, there's actually a breakdown, which it gets very soft, and then these keyboards come in. And that is actually influenced by an Arcturian, what did you call it? It's an Arcturian meditation tape of Arcturian music, Arcturian-influenced music that I found on YouTube. Because I needed something for the middle of the song, and then I heard that, and it was just, it worked perfectly with the theme of the song, and it ended up working into the middle of that song. So there's kind of a meditation piece that goes into the middle of this song, Arcturian Rain. So it's a beautiful song. I'm really proud of it.
And what about Malmsteen? They definitely impact your music.
Oh, my influences of Yngwie Malmsteen. I could talk a lot about that. I first heard Yngwie Malmsteen when I was like in grade, maybe 9. I think it was grade 9 or grade 10. And it was a friend of mine. He's a guitar player, and we used to hang out at a music store in Orangeville, Ontario. And then I went over to his place, and we were, trading off, different stuff on the guitar. And then he pulled out this song on vinyl. It was Yngwie Malmsteen Marching Out. And then he played I'll See the Light Tonight. And I never heard anything like that in my entire life. I was just completely blown away by what I was hearing. It was unlike any guitar playing I'd ever heard in my life. It was the fastest guitar playing I ever heard. The classical influence was definitely there, which that nobody else was doing, and it really influenced me. I just loved what he was doing. And back in high school, all of us were like, Yngwie Malmsteen freaks. He was like the epitome of guitar god. And so, we're all learning how to, all of us are like, trying to woodshed and learning how to sweep, do guitars, like sweep an arpeggio and learn as many Malmsteen licks as we can. And a lot of us were not very good back then, so it didn't really happen. But I spent years, I spent 2 years studying nothing but Yngwie Malmsteen. That took place maybe about eight or 9 years ago. And I literally did not listen to any other music besides Yngwie Malmsteen. I was up in Guelph during that period of time, so I had an hour each way getting home, and I listened to a Malmsteen for an hour every day, and then I would go home and transcribe his 50 bag of tricks, basically, learning all his different riffs and licks, why they worked, how they worked, and how to improvise with creating melodies. And that's what I learned mostly from Yngwie Malmsteen, was that he's never practiced a day in his life. That's what he said. He's never practiced a day in his life. He just plays melodies. And so that changed my direction in regards to how I practiced and what I focused on. So I stopped, my rudimentary, fundamental, guitar lessons and went back to just playing melodies and learning melodies, and my chops developed from there. And then I would transcribe these melodies into tablature and notations, so that I would every melody that I created that was very classically influenced became part of my repertoire, and they end up becoming my series of guitar online and guitar instructional lessons, which you will find on my website that links to PivotShare. So if you want to learn the kind of guitar playing that I do, go to my website, pyramidsonmars.com, and click on the lessons, and it'll take you to the lessons. There's a lot of free ones there too, a lot of freebies, but for a small monthly subscription, you get complete access to everything, including all tablatures and notations. And I don't just teach you, you know, how to play something, I actually show you the chord progressions behind it so you actually understand the theory behind it so that you can make up your own melodies and develop yourself.
And the series of guitar lessons that you developed that are offered online, a lot of them feature Malmsteen's concept and approach.
Yeah, so those guitar lessons that that I've created, there's a series that are very Malmsteen inspired. So I've taken a lot of Yngwie Malmsteen's ideas and I've transcribed them. They're a little bit, they're not quite exactly the same. Well, some of them are, but some of them are not. It's taking his concepts and then putting them into transcriptions so you can understand. So I teach his symmetrical scales that he uses, particularly the harmonic minor symmetrical scale. You'll find the majority of his music is playing the harmonic minor or the Phrygian, which is the same scale but starting on the fifth note, the dominant. And I'm not going to get into the theory. I explain that in my lessons. But that I teach that kind of stuff. I teach a lot of Yngwie Malmsteen patterns that he learned from Bach and Vivaldi himself, and my own versions of what I've learned from Bach and Vivaldi too. So I take those melodic ideas and show you how to turn those into great beautiful melodies that can stand out. And I give a theory behind it in regards to, you know, you don't need a lot of notes to make something memorable. If you got 4 to 6 notes, that's all you need. That's all you really need for a great melody. So, a lot of Yngwie Malmsteen influence in my guitar lessons. There's Satriani influence in several other guitar lessons. Then the Steve Vai influence in some other guitar lessons. And Marty Friedman. And, I kind of forget. Paul Gilbert, he's a huge influence on me. And you hear a lot of his influence in my playing.
So why is Countdown one of your favorite Rush sounds?
Countdown really, for me, is like the epitome of the perfect Rush. It's just the balance of everything, of the guitars, the bass, the keyboards, the drums, everything that just sounds in cohesion and creates such an emotion. That song is just so emotional and so powerful when you hear Countdown. And the song is about, it was actually inspired by the Columbia shuttle launches back in the 80s. The Rush actually, you know, flew down there to see a flight, launches, and it just totally inspired them to write that song. And so when you hear that song, Countdown, it really feels like you're actually there. And it's so powerful, but there's elements to that song that to me is what really I like to do as a musician. I've really stepped away from metal. I'm not so much influenced by or want to do metal anymore. I'm more influenced by Rush's, I would call it their mid-career. So albums like Moving Pictures, Permanent Waves, Signals, Grace Under Pressure, Power Windows, Hold Your Fire, that range of albums where there's predominantly there is keyboards, but it's the balance of everything in there. And that is what inspires me. And it's just the chords that Alex Lifeson of Rush uses. He's not using power chords that you hear in metal. He uses like full chords that actually are very expressive and tell a story. And that's what I'm really more into now is chords that are more expressive and telling stories. And the guitar is not the predominant, you know, the instrument. It carries with everything else that's going on. You know, sometimes it's the bass that's really carrying the song. So, and you know, when you hear the song Countdown, it's the exact same thing. You know, where there's certain parts, the guitars are more predominant with these beautiful chords, and then there's parts where the bass is like kicking in, you know, full throttle and really aggressive sounding. So to me, Countdown was like the perfect Rush song.
Oh, definitely a lot happening harmonically. You've had a really interesting collaboration with Stands with Bear. tell me about that experience and how it came about.
Wow, yeah, Stans with Bear. Yeah, Stans with Bear is, he's a Native American flute player. And I met him in Sedona, Arizona a couple years ago. And it was funny, though, because I was told by my extraterrestrial friends, the Pawnee, 2 years prior to meeting Stans with Bear, they said to me, "You're going to add Native American flute to some of your music." And when they told me that, I thought they were like losing their mind. I'm like, "What are you talking about? Native American flute to my music? Where are you getting this from?" But they told me that years ago. And then I go to Sedona, Arizona, and then Stans with Bear is doing a presentation, and then he starts playing his flute. And it was just immediately I knew, oh my God, he's the guy they were telling me about. And then afterwards we met up, and I told him I was a guitar player, and he said that he was looking for a guitar player like my playing for his band in Sedona. Because he's really a rock musician as well. You know, he was in rock bands back in the 80s. And so our musical influences and collaboration of what we love the most were both the exact same. We were cut from the same tree. And we were just completely blown away by it. And we both traded, you know, I gave him a bunch of my CDs and he gave me a bunch of his CDs. And then we really wanted to work together. And so then we started collaborations. I took several pieces of my music, and then I stripped things out of it, and then you know I sent them to him to add his piece, to add his part to it, and he just did a beautiful job with the music. It was like a marriage, a perfect marriage in heaven. The perfect blend of our energies together created something new from both of us. And he's playing, you know, he plays live and he plays some of our collaborations live, you know, for his concerts. And the overwhelming response is just, it just says it all. It just says it all. And, you know, we've got our music that we're sending out to publishers as well to be used in commercial, you know, for commercial purposes. And it is available for that as well, for people who want to check out that. We do have plans in the future to do some more collaborations together, too.
Wow, amazing. So next up is Knock Waffen. Tell us about the song, Kevin.
So Knock Waffen is about the secret space program. Because of my involvement with many people in the UFO industry, I've met a lot of people who are actually ex-members of the secret space program, and I've been invited. I'm part of secret chat groups on Facebook discussing a lot of these things. And so this song, Knock Waffen, is about the secret space program, about Nazi Germany, who actually had UFOs. They developed UFOs back in World War II. And after the war, many of them left and went to Antarctica and settled with New Schwabenland. This is all historical. It's not really talked about in the mainstream, kind of taboo stuff, but it's all very true. And you can look up Admiral Byrd and Project High Jump, and that will tell you about what happened with the battalion, the three naval fleets that he took down there to try and take out these Nazis, and then their fleet were attacked by UFOs that came out of the water, and with lasers they cut one of the ships right in half, and within half an hour the war was over, and they retreated, and the Nazis have been down there ever since, and now they've been in space for a long time, and that's developed into the secret space program. Long story.
So next up, Knock Waffen. We'll be right back. Wow, that's so cool, Kev, about being about a secret space program. I love it. Love it. Very interesting story behind that song. Is Stands With Bear going to be featured on the new music?
He's not going to be featured on my personal release, but we do plan on doing more collaborations in the very near future, which will be music that will be dedicated towards that cause of, you know, Pyramids of Mars and Stands With Bear. So it's going to be dedicated to that. It's not going to be music that I've written already in the past in their new versions. We're going to write, you know, brand new, fresh material for that. And that, you know, I expect to be, you know, that kind of stuff to be coming out probably in the next year or so.
So, Kevin, you have your own podcast on Artists First. Can you tell listeners about your podcast and what it's all about?
So I was approached 3 years ago by Artists First, by the producers, and I thought they were just contacting me, asking me if I wanted to, be interviewed for a radio interview. And then I talked to the producer, and he started talking about stuff, and he says, "How would you like to have your own radio show?" And I was just like, "What?" He says, "Yeah, you're an experiencer, and we have a hole in our network with Artists First. We used to have the Riley Martin show, and he became so huge that he was bought out by Howard Stern, and he moved over to Howard Stern's radio network. And since then, we've had we had this huge, massive following of UFO listeners on our radio show who no longer had that material, and we're looking for you to replace them. So essentially, Pyramids of Mars UFO Radio has replaced the Riley Martin show. So, and then the networkers have kind of been worried about, if I ever became big enough, that would, Howard Stern approach me. It hasn't happened yet, but it was a theoretical, interesting conversation. But my radio show, Pyramids of Mars UFO Radio, I interview experiencers, so people who have had extraterrestrial contact, multiple extraterrestrial contact. I also interview people who are hybrids, who their genetic makeup is a little bit more than just human DNA. There's a little bit more ET DNA in what they are. Some people I interview are hybrids in a soul sense, where they are actually dual souls, where they're partly human soul and partly extraterrestrial soul. I also interview people like Sunbow and Garrett Duncan, who are ambassadors for Sasquatch and who have telepathic, conversations with Sasquatch and have written many books. So, my show covers all kinds of stuff. I interview, researchers like Jason Quitt and Grant Cameron. So my show covers quite a lot in the UFO field. It's for educational purposes and to help prepare people for official first contact. So official first contact is actually happening in the fall of this year. So be prepared.
So what can we expect from Pyramid on Mars this year?
I'm working presently on finishing a new album, which is called Cosmic Angels. However, doing something a little bit different this year. Rather than releasing an album, I'm going to be releasing the album in singles. I'll be releasing each individual song with music videos to promote those songs. It's a completely different marketing strategy. And I've changed gears quite a bit, because you have to adapt with the times and what marketing strategies actually are better in today's society, in today's music world. So I'll be releasing singles every few months of the songs from this album. And then later on, at some point down the road, a full album will be available, but these songs will be released as singles and available for streaming or for single purchases.
We hear the song Ambassador next. Talk about the song, Kevin.
The next song, The Ambassador, is it's kind of a tells the story itself. It's a great song on Edge of the Black that tells the story of a person who's been a spokesperson for the planet Earth to use newest technology to go through a black hole, wormhole into, you know, to new civilizations, and try and make contact with extra civilizations somewhere else, you know, in the universe. So that's kind of the story behind that song.
So next up, The Ambassador.
We'll be right back.
I love that song, Kevin. That was a great track. One of your songs is a ballad about a long-lost love. I want to hear the story behind that.
Oh, boy. You had to ask that one. Yeah, there's it was actually the first song that I wrote for Pyramids of Mars, which was on the first album, and it's the last song on the album called Never Forgot You. So that was the very first song I ever wrote for Pyramids of Mars, and it was very touching, very touching for my heart. It has to do with a lost, you know, a girl, you know, a girl that I lost. It was kind of like we both grew very close, and because of life circumstances, it was like two passing ships in the ocean that were never meant to ever see each other or be together. So that was a very heartbreaking story for me, that song. I don't like getting into details about who it's about, but it is about someone I was very close to, and I had to let them go, or we had to let each other go because of it was just the timing in the universe that never worked out for us, and we were in circumstances that were impossible for us to be together. One of life's lessons, you know, some people in life will find someone they love, who is their soulmate or who they love, and will find love on Earth, and others will never find love on this timeline. It just wasn't part of their contract.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Kevin. So, Kev, thank you so much for coming on the episode.
Thank you, Shay, for having me on the show. I've had a great time.
Where is it best for fans to follow you? Like, what platform are you more active on?
Yes, you can follow me, best to follow me, on my website at pyramidsonmars.com. Please don't forget to subscribe so you can keep up with updates of everything new that's coming up. And new music and new lessons if you're a guitar player, and all kinds of trips and tricks, you know, tips and tricks for the independent musician. So please subscribe to that. Follow me on pyramidsonmars.com. Follow me on Facebook at Pyramids on Mars, and you can also follow me on Twitter, pyramidsonmars_. So there's where the best place to find me.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. Next episode is February the 25th. Mooka of the Beat Flux joins us. The Beat Flux is a collective global rock project created by London-based guitarist and producer Mooka. London, UK-based Mooka is the mastermind behind the Beat Flux. He's a fully rounded talent, guitarist, music producer, songwriter, and sound engineer. Mooka is also a radio show host, London Calling, on 89 FM. He is also the owner of the Secret Warehouse of Sound, a music production studio in East London, and is very thick into the London music scene. So, catch you at the pod on February 25th, On Air Indie, from my pad to yours, over the airwaves. Subscribe fees at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.